Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on RFID, radio frequency identification tags, right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune newspaper. Here's what he had to say to the New York Press Association on February the 26th, 1936. He said, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares to express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week," he said, "for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper like Othello before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are," he said, "the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes." Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors, Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this Global 2000 program and Bible prophecy and the New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? That's 4 hours of entertaining, educational, informative information, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. Call direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. RFID, radio frequency identification tags. Walmart is the mover and shaker in the commercial world for these new RFID tags. I've made a number of reports on RFID. And about, well, I'd say once a week or maybe twice a month, a good article comes across my desk on RFID. I thought I'd bring you up to date on what's going on because RFID will be the precursor, in my view, of this Mark of the Beast program that ultimately will make all the sense in the world. When the Mark of the Beast is introduced, it will be because it's necessary. It's logical. It's like searching your baggage before you get on an airliner. It just makes all the sense in the world, given the world's proclivity for terrorism. So, all eyes are on Walmart as it approaches January, the deadline for tracking of merchandise by way of RFID tags. When Walmart Stores Incorporated talks, other retailers listen, especially now when it comes to the future of RFID, and after the first quarter of this year, much of what Walmart says will be based on what happens at its three Dallas distribution centers. A pilot project involving several of Walmart's suppliers will test the efficacy of doing what the world's largest retailer has already told its 100 largest suppliers that they must do by next January, and that is to ship pallets and cases equipped with radio frequency identification tags. As the pallets and cases pass through distribution centers and other points along the supply chain, special electronic devices will read those tags and distribute data to managers to keep them updated with the latest information on the status of shipments. One of our biggest opportunities is to fill the visibility gaps that we have in our supply chain. Simon Langford, he's a Walmart RFID strategy manager. And he said, so we have visibility of what's arriving in our distribution centers, what's shipping to stores, and what we're receiving in those stores. Well, now, you can see that this makes all the sense in the world for Walmart, or for that matter, any retailer that wants to keep track of their inventory. Inventory is an essential part of doing business. That's all there is to it. And just-in-time delivery was made possible by these barcodes. You see, when that barcode is read at the computer checkout stand as you're walking out of the store, checking out your merchandise, it says that you bought a jar of pickles or a jar of ketchup or a bottle of wine, whatever it happens to be, and it immediately keeps track of the inventory that's going out of the store, and it sends a signal that says reorder. So it doesn't require that somebody go down the aisle, count the jars of mayonnaise or pickles or wine that's on the shelf, make a subtraction, and then write out a piece of paper. It's all done automatically. It's all done by computer. Makes all the sense in the world. My complaint, my concern, my worry is they're going to put these RFID tags in a pair of shoes. And then they're going to sell me that pair of shoes and that RFID tag, which is about the size of a grain of rice or maybe the size of a grain of sand. I mean, you know, this thing can get pretty small. And they're going to leave it in those shoes or on one of those shoes. And then they'll be able to read that tag from a satellite up in space and be able to track my shoes. Now, don't think that that's too wild, because we already have that technology. We do that with prisoners. We make them wear an ankle bracelet. And then we can tell right where that guy is through global positioning satellites to within 3 square feet of any place on planet Earth. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that we go through a period that we went through with World War II. That is, we have rationing. The government comes in and says, well, you're only allowed to have one pair of shoes. We had that in World War II. About, if I remember right, when I was a little kid, I think we could get one pair of shoes every 3 months or 6 months. Maybe some of you old-timers could correct me on that, but I know that I wore out a pair of shoes before the time, and I had a sole flapping, and it had string tied around it to hold it up. And then finally they had to cut it off and then put a piece of cardboard inside my shoe to keep my foot separated from the ground. I mean, we were improvising there until the ration card came and we could go to town and get a new pair of Buster Brown shoes. All right, now, let's suppose that for some reason you've had a lot of foresight and you were expecting this rationing and you went out and you bought, like I do, you go out and you buy 4 pairs of shoes. Now, that's enough shoes to last me for 4 years. And there's no rationing, and I've got these 4 pairs of shoes up in my attic, and all of a sudden rationing comes on, and the satellite identifies my house and says, George Gordon's got 4 pairs of shoes. He's a criminal, he's a hoarder, he's hoarding shoes, and we can identify him and bring out the shoe police. And you could have the wine police and the shoe police. You know, you've already got the building inspector police, and you got the highway patrol police. I mean, you've got cops looking at everything that you do in life. Securities and Exchange Police, you know, they're looking for Martha Stewart's to lock up and things like that. Now, that's my concern. and it isn't here yet, but as I look at Revelation 13 talking about this mark of the beast, you can't buy, sell, or trade without this mark. Now, somebody's going to be watching. There's going to be a big brother someplace if I can't buy, sell, and trade and do it anonymously. I teach a class on private business. I think that we can do this privately, but I think we can do it anonymously. But keep in mind that there's somebody looking over your shoulder trying to find out, so it's going to be up to you to keep it secret. I mean, if you want to keep your privacy, you're the guy that's got to keep it secret. So I've got to find that RFID tag and take it out of the shoes. Then, watch this. What if, just what if, the government enacts a law and says, if we catch you out on the street wearing a pair of shoes that don't have the RFID tag in it. I mean, you've seen those pillows and blankets, you know, that says, if you remove this tag, life imprisonment is the certain reward. Have you seen those? Do not remove this tag under penalty of law. Well, you know, government can pass those kinds of law. Now you're walking down the street and here comes the shoe police. And he's kind of like a cop running around with a radar detector looking for people that are driving too fast. Only this is the shoe police, and he's looking for people that have ripped out their RFID tag in their shoes. Now you may be sitting there saying, God, this guy's really off the wall. He's paranoid. Well, okay. We went through this in World War II. Some of you people might not be able to remember that because you're young yet, you know, but I can still remember World War II. In World War I, I've got the papers and books and documents here and court cases, you know, where government was all intrusive looking for spies and saboteurs and so on. And when an emergency comes up, you've already got it. They're looking for terrorists. You know, only a terrorist would run around on the streets wearing a pair of tennis shoes without his RFID tag. Now, isn't that true? Then the government can come along here and say, my God, the penalty for running around wearing a pair of shoes without an RFID tag could be, I don't know, 5, 10, 20, 30 years in prison. I mean, you know, the sky's the limit, isn't it? Well, Langford refers to those visibility benefits as the low-hanging fruit offered by RFID implementations. As RFID usage and technology evolves, he says, retailers will benefit from the higher hanging fruit of data integration with back-end software applications. For example, to automatically update inventory records and to share inventory status with suppliers. Other advancements in store, he adds, will be the ability to use RFID tags to check such things as whether refrigerated products kept a constant temperature throughout the shipment. RFID technology uses a system of radio signal emitting tags mounted on cases, pallets, or even individual products. See, the individual products. That is, not only do we want to keep track of the container and the pallet in the container and the case on the pallet, but the boxes in the box on the pallet in the case in the container coming from China. Now, I can also see that they could use this as a device to find shoplifters. And I don't blame Walmart or anybody else for wanting to find the shoplifter who's stealing. You know, it affects us all. When they lose inventory through shoplifting, well, just raise the price on those of us that don't steal. And those of us that don't steal pay the price for those that do. But I don't want that RFID tag on anything that I buy and leave the store with. Now, that's my complaint. RFID technology uses a system of radio signal emitting tags mounted on cases, pallets, or even individual products. And when the shipments enter distribution centers or stores, electronic devices read the tags and pass the information on their shipment status to retail managers. Eventually, the RFID tag will flow over a web-based electronic product code network to provide universal access to authorized users no matter where they're located. Authorized users. Authorized shoe police. Isn't it? Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're talking about RFID, radio frequency identification. Now let's take a look at another use for RFID tags, and that's in your automobile. A little-known federal agency is planning a new monitoring program by which the government would track every car on the road. Got that? Every car on the road by using onboard transceivers. Now, a transceiver is a device that we use in airplanes. So the airplane crashes, it emits a signal, and then an airplane flying by or a satellite circling overhead can identify where that airplane has crashed. It makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? I mean, after all, if you were on board an airplane, the last thing you want to do is crash or be involved in an airplane crash, and then nobody's looking for you because they don't know that you crashed or don't know where you're at, even if they knew you did crash or you were overdue. So these technologies that make all the sense in the world and get us real excited and say, gosh, that's really a good idea. Now we can put that in your automobile. Well, let's suppose that you want to take your girl out, and you're out, or your wife or whoever it happens to be in here, And you're parked up over the mountain over here, you know, looking down over the city or whatever you're doing. And, you know, sometimes you kind of like to have a little privacy. And here comes the automobile police. Hey, what are you doing up here? Why are you parked up here? Are you lost? We detected that you were on this lonely county road all by yourself out here overlooking the city. And we thought, well, gosh, maybe this guy's in trouble. Maybe he needs help. And so here we are. We're the automobile police, search and rescue, and we're just looking for cars that look like they're... Now, normal cars are driving up and down the freeways, aren't they? They're out moving around. So when your car isn't moving around, well then, where is it located and why is it located there? Think about that. The agency, the Intelligent Transportation Systems Joint Program Office, is part of the Department of Transportation. And according to an extensive report in the Charlotte, North Carolina, creative loafing, the agency doesn't respond to public inquiries about its activities. Now, that's kind of strange, isn't it? They don't respond. If you wrote them a letter or called them on the phone and said, hey, can you tell me something about this? No, we don't respond to this. This is secret. Why is the government carrying on secret endeavors? Is that to protect us from terrorists? We don't want the terrorists to know what we're doing. Now, who's in control here? Is it the electorate? Is it the people? Or is it the government? People that keep secrets from somebody else. I mean, I can understand the boss keeping secrets from his employees, but what about the employees keeping secrets from the boss? It's kind of a guardian ward relationship there, isn't it? Now, according to the report, cutting-edge tracking technology will be used by government transportation management centers to monitor every aspect of transportation. Under the plan, not only will movement be monitored, but it also will be archived in massive databases for future use. So we'll be able to tell how many times you went up to this isolated spot up in the mountains. I mean, maybe it's a regular place. I mean, you could be a deer hunter, and you're out here hunting deer, and Fish and Game will be watching to see if you're in an authorized hunting area or why it is that you're parked in this non-authorized spot. Isn't that just real special? Now, according to the report, cutting-edge tracking technology will be used by government transportation management centers. So there's going to be centers all over the country. And the paper reports a group of car manufacturers, technology companies, and government interests have worked toward implementing the project for 13 years. So it's not something brand new. They've been working on this for 13 years. You'll have OnStar on board all the time. Now, the only way for people to evade the national transportation tracking system they're creating will be to travel on foot. If you drive your car, and your every movement will be recorded and archived. The federal government will know the exact route that you drove to work, how many times you braked along the way, the precise moment that you arrived, and that every other Tuesday you opt to ride the bus. Now, you know, you talk about privacy. You talk about an all-pervasive government intrusion into your life. They asked me that on the last census back in 2000. Remember, they had that census out there. They wanted to know what kind of a car I had, wanted to know how many miles I drive to work, and all kinds of neat questions on there. Well, once these centers are put into operation, we won't have to worry about, wonder about, or ask you about. We'll already know it. We've got it from a computer on board your car. They'll know you're due for a transmission repair and that you've neglected to fix the ever-widening crack that resulted from a pebble dinging your windshield. The agency's website says that its purpose is to use advanced technology to improve the efficiency and safety of our nation's surface transportation system. Critics believe the program will be used to line the pockets of business interests that stand to gain from the sale of this needed technology, and that the government will use the data collected to tax drivers on their driving habits. Though the program has ominous privacy implications, Creative Loafing reports none of the privacy rights organizations that it contacted were even aware of the government's plans. The report states that more than $4 billion in federal tax money has already been spent to lay the foundation. That's to lay the foundation, $4 billion. On this system, which will use GPS technology and other methods to monitor Americans' movements. The plan includes transceivers on or onboard units that will transmit data from each car to the system, the first models of which are expected to be unveiled next spring. By 2010, the paper reported, automakers hope to start installing them in cars, and the goal is to equip 57 million vehicles by 2015. Creative Loafing quotes Bill Jones, technical director of the Intelligent Transportation Systems Joint Program Office, from a speech that he gave in January. The concept, said Jones, is that vehicle manufacturers will install a communications device on the vehicle starting at some future date, and equipment will be installed on the nation's transportation system to allow all vehicles to communicate with the infrastructure. Now, we use this already. You can get one of these smart passes as you're driving down the freeway. And when you come to the toll gate, you just drive right on through, and the overhead camera or overhead scanner determines whether or not you've got one of these passes. And if you don't, the cop runs out and grabs you. And if you got one of the passes, it just automatically taxes you, charges you, deducts from your account or whatever. Now, we look at this kind of technology and we say, well, gosh, that's really neat. That's time-saving, and it's just real good. But, of course, in a nation of people who have no regard for privacy, it probably doesn't make much difference. But what if you're an old-timer like me and you still have this remembrance of privacy, that where I drive my car and how much I paid for it, and who's riding with me, and where I drive it, and what route I take, and what days I use it is private, and it's my business, and it's none of yours or anybody else's. I mean, that's a wild new concept for most of you young people here, isn't it? I mean, you've got credit cards and checking accounts, and government knows all about your financial transactions, and your response is, well, gee, if you're not doing anything wrong, then why do you care? Well, I care because, you see, government can just make any activity that you engage in wrong, because government decides right and wrong, don't they? So if the government decides that wearing shoes without an RFID tag, or what if the government decides to tax automobile travel? What if they decide that, well, we want to keep air pollution down, so we're going to tax you a penny a mile for every mile that you drive? And so maybe they've got this RFID tag in your automobile, and this month you drive 1,000 miles. And so the government just automatically deducts, you know, this will really be convenient. You can just have an automatic deduction right out of your checking account, just like you pay your power bill. You know, you have the automatic payment, and they'll just automatically take out. If you drove 836 miles this month, they'll just take $8.36 out of your account. That's your driving tag. Government can do that because, after all, government is our guardian. Government decides right and wrong. Government is God. We worship the United States of America, New York, California, and North Dakota. We worship them because we obey those laws, and that's what worship is, obedience to your master. This is a master-servant relationship that we've never had in this country under our Constitution. And the fact that they're keeping it secret, I mean, when you call them up and say, well, we're doing a story and we'd like to put this in the newspaper, we'd like to put this on radio or television, we'd like to report this to our listeners, we don't make any comments about this. We've been working on this for 13 years, but it's top secret. Top secret? Since when do the employees in the company keep top secrets from the management or the boss? By the way, management may keep some secrets from the employees because there's a master-servant relationship there. But when government keeps secrets away from the people, then it tells you very plainly that the people are not sovereign and the people are not the masters over their politicians, but rather the politicians and the bureaucracy are the masters over the electorate, aren't they? Hey, let's hear it for democracy, shall we? This whole idea here is that we should capture data from a large number of vehicles, Jones said at another meeting of transportation officials in May. That data could then be used by public jurisdictions for traffic management purposes, and also by private industry such as Daimler Chrysler for the services that they wish to provide for their customers. Well, for instance, they could send you a letter, or they could call you in. They could say, hey, listen, your car is overdue for service. And the government could say, well, God, it's dangerous for you to be driving a car that hasn't had the oil changed and the brakes checked and maybe a safety service done on it. And so then they'll charge you with a crime. You know, today, you know, we have these safety inspections. You have to have your car safety inspected. Think how this could be so conveniently done by satellite with an RFID tag inside your car. They don't even have to come out. They could say, well, you were supposed to have your car serviced on the 15th and when it reached so many miles, and you didn't do that, so therefore you broke the law, and the fine is $150. Privacy nightmare. Privacy issue. There isn't going to be any privacy with automobiles over the next 10 years. Now, of course, you could go to your master, you could write a letter to your senators and representatives, and you could say, but master, please, please, don't oppress me like this. Now, of course, if you were politically competent, and this is a wild new concept, but what if you had political competence and you didn't have a representative or a senator as a public guardian, in a guardian-ward relationship? Yeah, that'd be a wild new concept, wouldn't it? Well, we got to take another break here, so hang on. We'll be back with more on RFID and government snoopers right after this. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. That wasn't anything to brag about, but today it's down to less than 38 days. That's right, 38 days for every man, woman, and child on the planet. We're living on the edge of massive starvation. And we Americans produce a lot of grain for export, all right. Then we turn around and import our grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, all of this globalization may be very good for business, but globalization is not good for me and it's not good for you. Now, I can remember back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. Today, we have a 3-day supply of food in our refrigerators, and we believe implicitly in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. But over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. Now, does that sound very intelligent to you? And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so reports the Club of Rome. And these evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause, and let you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. So if you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about RFID, radio frequency identification tags. It's not a brand new technology. It's been around with what we call a transponder. I can remember back in the 1950s or 60s when this was brand new technology. We used to use a machine or a gadget, an avionics, they call it, where you could be flying along and you could tune this thing into a AM or an FM radio station, and the needle would point in the direction that the radio station or their tower was emitting a signal from. And you could just fly right to it. And the minute you flew over the top of it, the needle would flip around 180 degrees. Now you're flying away from the tower, you see. That was the precursor to this GPS system that will identify where you're located. If you have one of these transponders in your airplane, a little later on, you know, they came up with a little machine, they called it a transponder. Works on the same principle. It's giving off a radio signal, and then anybody who's tuned into that radio signal can just fly right to where you're at, just like you're a radio station. And so the GPS has an onboard signal that's coming from your car, goes up to the satellite, and your car will have a identification number, and all of these signals will be going up to the satellite, and all of this will be computerized. And we can watch your car. We can computerize this thing and just automatically charge you whatever we decide, whatever we, your masters, decide is the tax that we want to charge, the law we want to impose. We'll just do it. Now, the book of Revelation talks about a time when you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade unless you're hooked into the system. Of course, that's for us futurists. Preterists don't need to worry about that because that's already happened. These RFID tags happened back around 70 AD and all Bible prophecy has been fulfilled. I'm not making fun of you there. The preterists have a good point. They're pointing out that Bible prophecy has already occurred, and that's true, it has. But Bible prophecy is dual. its application. It happens twice. History repeats itself. When God gives us a prophecy, he brings it to pass once, like the captivity of Israel. Then he issues another prophecy. And then generations, hundreds or thousands of years later, this prophecy comes to pass. There's a classic example of that duality in Bible prophecy in the book of Ezekiel. Take a look at the book of Ezekiel. It's written to the tribes of Israel. Israel. Of course, most people think that the Jews in Palestine are Israel. They're not. And Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9 tells you that they're liars and that they're not Jews. They claim to be, but they're not. But Ezekiel wrote that book to the tribes of Israel, 10 of them, the 10 lost tribes of Israel, 132 years after Israel had been taken into national captivity. Why would he be writing a prophecy after the fact? And then many skeptics look at that and say, look at this. These prophecies that are written were written after the fact. That can't be true. Well, the prophecies that Ezekiel wrote down have to do with our time, has to do with the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand today in 2004. Didn't have anything to do with Israel in 718 to 721 BC. Didn't apply to them. They'd already been taken into captivity. Now history is about to repeat itself. We're about to get our comeuppance again. There's only so many sodomites that the nation can tolerate. There's only so many abortions that you can perform. You can only pass your seed through the fire to Moloch for such and such a period of time. And the Messiah made an observation concerning sodomy. He said, you know, if the people of Sodom and Gomorrah had seen what you people have witnessed here, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Today we just laugh and scoff, which is exactly what Peter said. In the end times would come scoffers who'd kind of chortle a little bit and say, oh, you people are nuts. Well, okay. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I didn't come here to convince you that I'm right. I'm just here to give you some information. You can decide what you want to do with the information. But take a look here at Revelation 13:16. And I've been watching this now for 30 or 40 years, and it seems like it takes forever. And hell, I may die and be pushing up daisies here, and the next generation will see this come to pass. Every generation from Paul to today has been waiting for the second coming. Paul thought it was coming in his day. Every generation has thought that it was coming in their day. Every generation has been sitting here watching and wondering, how come it takes so long? In fact, there's an old adage that says, you know, that guy's slower than the second coming of Christ. You ever heard that? It's a long, slow process. It's kind of like geology. And they tell us in school, you know, how it took eons and billions of years for the Grand Canyon to carve its way down to where it is today. And it takes a long time. And on the geologic clock, you know, we're sitting here at about 2 seconds to midnight on the geologic clock, you know, with billions and billions of years. And of course, human beings are in a big hurry. We can't even go in and sit down. We have to go to the drive-up window. And we'll eat while we're driving down the street. I mean, Americans are pretty impatient people. You can see why Matthew 24 does not fit into the American scheme of things. It takes too long. Well, there's more here. The plan sees the federal government working with auto manufacturers to place these transponders in vehicles at the factory, giving consumers little chance to drive a new car that is not tethered to transportation computers. One of the program's visions is for transportation officials to share collected data with law enforcement, meaning a driver potentially could get a speeding ticket based on information stored in a government computer. And for many years, the highway patrol, when they wanted to trace a car, they would sneak out and put a transponder under your automobile. Just clip it on there, magnet. And then the highway patrolman, you see, when he saw that car go by, it would send him a signal, and he'd turn around and go follow that car. I mean, I knew that clear back in 1989. Transponders had been around for a long time. So using a transponder and sticking it under your car so that they could follow your movements has been around for, you know, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years. Now, of course, the police don't run around telling you, oh, yeah, we use transponders to track cars. You know, we can stick this under a mafia don's car, and then we can follow him around, see where he's having his meetings. So this technology isn't something new. It's just that now we're going to put it in everybody's car. We're going to use it on everybody. And then when this thing is to a certain point, see, the policeman, he can just drive down the street and click onto your transponder emitting your signal from your car, identify it, and identify whether or not your car is registered, whether or not your car is insured, whether or not you're driving too fast, when was the last time you had a safety inspection. He can get all that information just following you down the road. He'll have that, and it'll come up on his onboard computer in his police car. And then he'll say, well, gosh, look at all the crimes that this guy is committing. His driver's license is expired, and the registration is expired. His insurance is expired. Boy, this is a big one. We'll make $300 or $400 off of this clown. You want that kind of technology? You want that kind of intrusiveness? Neil Schuster is the president and CEO of the Intelligent Transportation Society of America. It's a group of government and business people. That's the driving force behind the program. Get this. Neil Schuster is the president and CEO of the Intelligent Transportation Society of America. It's a group of government and business people, and they are the driving force behind the program. It's for business, it's here to make money. For government, it's here to collect taxes. And all of this money is going to be coming from you. So you're going to lose your privacy, number one. Of course, for most Americans, it doesn't make any difference because we don't have any anyway. At least most Americans don't have any. The CIA has lots of privacy. Your local police department, they have a lot of privacy. And I have a lot of privacy, and there are some of us out here that still are concerned about our Fourth Amendment and our privacy, and so we guard it kind of jealously. You won't see me buying one of these new cars with this transponder on it. I'll still be driving my old pickup, but, you know, nevertheless, you never can tell when some guy's going to sneak in and stick a transponder underneath your car. You'll know it the first time the cop stops you, though. You'll say, well, is that just a coincidence that he stopped me, or is there a transponder on my vehicle? Well, when I get on an airplane, everyone in the system knows where I am, Schuster told Creative Loafing. They know which tickets I bought. You could probably go back through United Airlines and find out everywhere that I traveled in the last year. Do I worry about that? No! We've decided that airline safety is so important that we're going to put a transponder in every airplane and track it. We know the passenger list of every airplane, and we're tracking these things so that planes don't crash into each other. Shouldn't we have the same sense of concern and urgency about the road traveler? The average number of fatalities each year from airplanes is less than 100. The average number of deaths on the highway is 42,000. I think we've got to enter the debate as to whether we're willing to change that in a substantial way, and it may be that we have to allow something on our vehicles that makes our cars safer. I wouldn't mind some of this information being available to make my roads safer so that some idiot out there doesn't run into me. Isn't that just real special? Well, if you want to belong to a big brother society, that makes all the sense in the world. And remember, the insurance companies have to pay out billions of dollars a year on these 40,000 deaths every year in automobiles. If we could eliminate those 40,000 deaths a year, look at all of the savings we'd have. Now, let me ask you this. Do you believe for a moment that the insurance companies are going to lower your premiums? Or do you think they're going to keep the premiums right where they're at, maybe raise them 10% a year? And then make the extra profit. I mean, that's where you ought to follow the money, shouldn't you? Hang on, I'll be back right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about RFID. Well, at least one proponent of the plan is actually using the term Orwellian to describe it. At a workshop for industry and government leaders last year, the Charlotte paper reports John Worthington, president and CEO of TransCore, one of the companies currently under contract to develop these onboard units for cars, described the system as a kind of an Orwellian all-singing, all-dancing collector, aggregator, disseminator of transportation information. Spy chips for the nation's livestock. Well, it's one thing to put it into your livestock. It's something else to put this chip into people, don't you think? Now, that's a master-servant relationship, and I've got some servants out here called cows and sheep, and I don't do it yet, but there are some technologies out there for identifying your cattle. I still use ear tags and marks, but then if I wanted to put a chip in my cow, I could do that. Now, what we're waiting for are these chips being put into people, and I got a little information the other day about this national ID for everybody. Well, the California Republican is not about to describe his new bill in these terms, but that's the reality. It's national IDs for everybody. And Dressler's legislation would prohibit employers from hiring people unless the job applicants first obtain new federal ID cards with their photograph, social security number, and an encrypted electronic strip with additional information. And any employer who fails to comply faces hefty fines and prison terms of up to 5 years. Remember what I just told you? I mean, you know, it used to be that you could hire somebody. Now, you can't just hire anybody. They've got to be citizens. They've got to fill out an I-9 form. And you've got to have a social security number. You've got to register these people. And I can remember when a man just went out and went to work. It was a business transaction between two people. Today, you can't work without the government's involvement. You can't work without steel-toed safety shoes, safety goggles, glasses, OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and a whole host and plethora of government bureaucrats. And they decide right and wrong, good and bad, and you just sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. And if you don't, then we're going to punish you. And now this guy's saying, gee, we'd like to lock you up, Mr. Employer, for 5 years if you don't follow our laws. These laws create morality. Now, God never gave us this kind of restriction. You know, God, people complain about God's law being so harsh. Thou shalt not. So negative. My God, let me ask you a question. Don't you think that this is pretty negative when we're going to follow your car around and be able to identify every place you've been and the route that you took? Isn't that kind of negative? And now, we're not going to let you hire anybody without our permission. We got to know who you're hiring and who you're doing business with and how much you're paying him. I mean, you know, we used to have what's known as the free marketplace. Now we have government controls. We have government controls in this country that even Stalinist Russia didn't have. And we thought that was pretty bad. Adolf Hitler never had the kind of control over the German people that the United States government has over you. Got that? Now, Dreyer is smart enough to realize that these federal IDs would be immediately forged, so he takes the next step of linking them to an employer employment eligibility database that's queried by card readers whenever the ID is swiped. The employment database is required to include all such data maintained by the Department of Homeland Security, combined with what the Social Security Administration has on file. Most all bills die without the dignity of a floor vote, but Dreyer is a rising star in the Republican Party with the influence to enact legislation quickly. And this isn't coming from the liberals, boys and girls, it's coming from the Republicans. As a chairman, he's one of the youngest to head the powerful House Rules Committee, not to mention acting as co-chair of Californians for Bush and chairman of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's transition team. In 1998, his conservative voting record garnered a perfect 100% rating from the Christian Coalition and a 0% rating from the left-leaning Americans for Democratic Action. Last week, Dreyer appeared on MSNBC as a Republican spokesman before the presidential debate. The ostensible reason Dreyer gives for a federal ID curbing illegal immigration, the subject of a recent Time magazine cover story, the exposition or the explosion in counterfeit identity documents and employers who are unable or unwilling to establish the authenticity of documents presented by job applicants severely undermines our national security. And Dreyer said when introducing his bill, which he calls the Illegal Immigrant Enforcement and Social Security Protection Act. You see how sensible that is? I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. We are being inundated by 2,000 illegal immigrants a day coming across the border from Mexico. We've got to stem that illegal immigration tide. So we're going to implement the mark of the beast to accomplish that goal. The other day I heard that Medicare can save, I don't know, up to 50%. They think they could cut Medicare costs 50% if they would implement the mark of the beast to eliminate all the paperwork, put it all on computer. Well, I don't know what the paperwork costs, but, you know, we could really keep track of paperwork and fraud in Medicare, all the theft and graft and corruption that goes on in there, if we could computerize this, so that if we knew that when you go in for Medicare, we know what your medical history is, and we know how much is being spent and what you need and when you last bought this, and that third wheelchair that you just bought or was sold to you, you know, is stacking up as fraud, you know, we could probably save a lot of money. And again, see all the sense that it makes? If you'll give up your Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your person, houses, papers, and effects, and carry an onboard transponder in your car so that we can follow every move that you make, and then carry a chip in your right hand or in your forehead, I mean, can you think of anything that's more convenient, safer, or that makes more sense? When the mark of the beast comes, ladies and gentlemen, it will be accepted with gratitude. You will go down to get your chip in your hand or in your forehead because it makes sense and it protects you. To hell with freedom, to hell with privacy. I mean, after all, you don't have privacy on an airliner. Why should you have privacy in your automobile or in your home? Now, the real reasons are slightly more complicated. Tight re-election campaign. Dreyer is used to commanding handsome victories at the polls every 2 years over his Democratic rivals. But since 1996, Dreyer's re-election percentages have dropped or dipped below 60% a few times, and events in the last month slammed the powerful Republican with a series of embarrassing pre-election day setbacks. First came allegations in the LA Weekly newspaper and the New York Post that Dreyer, who has amassed a slew of anti-gay votes, is homosexual. Then two local talk show hosts, John Caboit and Ken Champu of KFI AM 640, became fed up with Dreyer's stand on immigration. So they organized a Fire Dreyer rally on September 15th on charges that illegal immigrants from Mexico have wreaked havoc on California's economy. Held outside Dreyer's Glendora, California office, it drew hundreds of protesters armed with signs and bullhorns who called for a political human sacrifice, according to the Pasadena Star News. So the real problem with Dreyer's plan is not that it creates an ID card. Driver's licenses do that already today. Conservative publications continued the attack, a worrisome sign for a Republican who won't deny wanting to be Speaker of the House someday. WorldNet Daily columnist Jane Chasten wrote an article on September 16th endorsing the Fire Dreyer scheme. It will leave congressmen who have done little or nothing to help stem the tide of illegal immigrants quaking in their boots. The upshot, just hours before the Fire Dreyer protest, the embattled congressman informed the Claremont Kiwanis Club that he would introduce his national ID bill. 6 days later, Dreyer did just that. The real problem with Dreyer's plan is not that it creates an ID card. Driver's licenses do that already. But Dreyer would create a back-end database for authentication purposes that would track whenever the ID is swiped. Just as the Social Security numbers uses grew, these readers, or those readers, would appear just about everywhere. Banks, office buildings, supermarkets. You'd have to swipe your ID first. Such a database would overflow with detailed records of all of our life's activities and create an irresistible temptation for misuse by corrupt officials or electronic intruders. Now picture that. Can you? You go into the supermarket and you have to swipe your national ID card. You know, it's going to get to be obnoxious. Oh God, I forgot my ID card at home, and now I can't do my shopping in the supermarket because you can't buy anything in the supermarket without your ID card. Or you're driving down the street and you see that your car is running low on gas. You whip into 7-Eleven and you can't pump any gas because, oh my God, I forgot my identification card at home. Or I left it in the locker at work. Well, the obvious solution to that is to make sure you always have your identification with you at all times, is to put it in your hand, isn't it? So that you'll have it very handy. You can just swipe your hand right over the gas pump and there it is. You are the person who is authorized here to buy gas. You know, it'll make all the sense in the world and you'll love it. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we recommend or endorse will reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on this Law Hour show are political, religious, economic, or sectarian. They're racial or they're ethnic partisans who do not necessarily endorse the opinions or beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and editorial review. All right, now the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. We're just about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right here. All of these Law Hour programs are archived by title and date on our webpage. Well, there's the signal that says my time's about up, so we're going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So until then, God willing, of course, good night, friends.